Hey y'all, welcome back. Today we'll delve into the chilling and heartbreaking stories of two women whose lives were tragically cut short by a merciless killer in Birmingham, Alabama. Jamira Fowler, a vibrant, ambitious woman, was pursuing her dreams in Birmingham. A beacon of positivity, Jamira's infectious smile and determination left an indelible mark on everyone she encountered. However, her promising journey was abruptly interrupted when she became a victim of a ruthless killer. Ariel Jones, another resident of Birmingham, was a compassionate soul with a heart full of dreams. Her life, much like Jamira's, was tragically cut short, leaving family and friends grappling with grief and unanswered questions. Join me as we navigate through the details of these harrowing incidents and the darkness that cast a shadow over both women's untimely fates. I'm Renetta Rideout, and this is Misogynoir Murders. At approximately 8:15 on the morning of April 18th, 2023, a resident who I'll call Jerry lives on the 8400 block of Fifth Avenue in Birmingham, Alabama. Jerry called the police to report an abandoned vehicle in the neighborhood. This particular neighborhood is located in the Northeast Lake area of Birmingham. Although the area looks somewhat remote to my big city girl eyes, there are actually quite a few homes spread out on the block. To give those of you who live in packed concrete jungles like me a visual, I'd say you could probably fit two or three houses within the spaces between the houses located in that area. And it's enveloped by the beauty of nature. Lots of dense trees and heavy grass surround the houses and fill in some of those gaps. Jerry had noticed a four-door blue sedan at least a day before, but didn't recognize it and couldn't recall exactly when it appeared, only that it had, and that just didn't sit right with them. So they reported it. When the police arrived to check it out, they immediately noticed that the car looked like it had been unsuccessfully set on fire, which is never a good sign. They looked inside, under, and around the burned vehicle, and eventually made their way to the trunk. Now, for me, this is where my heart would be pounding in my chest, because again, the red flags are piling up. I'd be thinking that I'm about to make some gruesome discovery, but then again, I'm also no seasoned member of law enforcement. Anyway, as they proceeded to open the trunk, they did make that gruesome discovery. There, lying inside the trunk, was the body of a woman. Now, it's not clear based on the sources I read what condition the body was in. Had it been burned? Was there blood present, etc.? However, the Jefferson County Medical Examiner's Office performed the autopsy the next day and identified the victim as 31-year-old Ariel Jones and ruled that her manner of death was homicide. The cause of her death was not initially reported to the public, but it was later shared that Ariel had been shot to death. Unfortunately, there aren't many details about the investigation into Ariel's murder. There simply aren't a lot of reports about her or the murder during those initial days of the investigation. That could be for several valid reasons, but I think it's a bit mind-boggling that a burnt-out car with a body in the trunk wasn't a daily featured story. But alas, it was not. At least, not from what I can tell. And that means that I can't provide you with details about the investigation, but I will try to fill in a few gaps. I imagine that once the investigators learned Ariel's identity, they dug into her life just as I tried to do. I was able to learn that she was not an Alabama native, but instead was born in Illinois and raised in Indiana, where her family still lives. She moved to Birmingham, perhaps with her mother, I'm not too clear on that, but she did leave the bulk of her family behind. Ariel also had a twin brother who took to social media to share his heartbreak and anger over the untimely loss of his twin sister. I also learned that Ariel did have a significant other, but I'm assuming that if or when police looked into him, everything was on the up and up. Again, not much info to go on here, but I can only assume that the detectives were busy digging into Ariel's life, her family, circle, and last known movements. Surely this took some time to do, which is understandable, but a break in Ariel's case wouldn't be had for another few months. Let's fast forward to Wednesday, May 31st, and 31-year-old mother of two, Jamira Fowler, told her family she was heading out to meet up with someone from the Facebook marketplace to purchase an item she found online. But when she never returned home and failed to answer calls, this raised all sorts of flags for her loved ones. So they promptly reported her missing. It seems like the disappearance was taken seriously because the next day, June 1st, the Birmingham Police Department tweeted about Jamira's disappearance at 5:22 p.m. The tweet mentioned that she was last seen around 4 p.m. the day before in the 500 block of 41st Street North and might be in a white Nissan Versa note with the license plate number of 1A0YPYR. She was described as a black woman standing at 5 feet 6 inches tall and weighing about 250 pounds. 3 hours later, local news sources reported on her disappearance too, but with a couple of additional details about her physical description and, most notably, an escalated classification. They added to the tweeted description that she wore shoulder-length hair and possibly a black dress and black sneakers. However, it was headlined that not only was Jamira missing, but the police classified her as endangered. The public was urged to contact the local police if they had any information regarding her whereabouts. So, as I researched this case, what stood out to me was not only that the police and local media were proactive about finding Jamira, but more specifically that she was almost immediately classified as endangered. We usually see that when a white woman or child goes missing, maybe an elderly person or someone with a health concern, or in cases where there's strong evidence to suggest that the missing person is in danger. Being that Jamira was neither white, a kid, elderly, and didn't have a known health risk, I can only assume the police had other evidence that led them to believe she was in danger and hadn't merely run off and abandoned her kids, which is so often the narrative. However, despite my inkling about the mystery evidence, no such details have ever been shared publicly. But if you can believe it, just 40 minutes after the nighttime news reports about Jamira, someone reported a burning body behind their house. At about 9 p.m. on Thursday, June 1st, Hebert Brown, a resident of Tucker Street, which sits behind the 200 block of Sellers Road, was aroused by a disturbance coming from behind his house. Now, his home is situated in a heavily wooded area in East Birmingham. There's a short, dead-end road and tiny church nearby. This area is also about 10 to 15 minutes north of where Ariel was found. From what Mr. Brown could make out from inside his house, he thought he could see the flames of a fire. Wanting to know exactly what was going on just behind his property, he grabbed a flashlight and headed out back. Now, side note, it couldn't be me. Personally, like, if I see fire, I'm not going out there. I'm calling the popos and we just finna sit in this house and wait, or better yet, I'm running. I'm getting in my car and I'm driving down the street or something, because I'm not ashamed to admit I am not brave enough to go out there and check. But shout out to Mr. Brown, because he did just that. As he approached, he assumed someone was outside burning trash, but once he got outside, he came to the shocking realization that this was no common garden fire. It was a burning human body. Needless to say, he couldn't call 911 fast enough to report this gruesome discovery. Law enforcement and the Birmingham Fire and Rescue arrived on the scene. First, the fire needed to be extinguished, so the fire department got right to it. Now, we know that fire is one of the best ways to destroy evidence, which is why so many criminals use it. In addition to the fire itself, there's the extinguishing of it that also is an evidence preservation nightmare. Any trace or biological evidence the suspect may have left behind that the fire didn't destroy will almost certainly be destroyed or at the very least contaminated by putting the fire out. However, on the flip side, it's by the grace of God that Mr. Brown called for help when he did, and that it came so fast. As a result, they were able to recover the body and could even see visible signs of trauma. Just to be clear, I couldn't find what specifically the signs of trauma were. It could have just been that the body looked like it had been burned, but to me, that's assumed if it was on fire, right? Seems like a redundant thing to mention, and made me wonder if there were other markings on the body unrelated to the fire. At any rate, Chief Deputy Coroner Bill Yates confirmed that the medical examiner positively identified the victim as Jamira and that she was killed by a bullet to the head. The other thing to note is that while Jamira's car was eventually located, it was not at the crime scene. But I couldn't find any details about what evidence, if any, was found in, around, or on her vehicle. Now that Jamira had been found, detectives had the heartbreaking task of notifying her family. Remember, Jamira had two young children, and I can only imagine how devastating this news was for them and their family. Jamira was just a great mother and a woman who aspired to take their lives to new heights. The thought of her being potentially lured to her murder is just unfathomable. I feel so badly for the family, but especially for the babies. Shortly after Jamira's body was discovered, Crime Stoppers posted a $5,000 reward for information leading to an arrest for the murder. Now, I'm about to take a giant leap here, and I apologize for that, but as often is the case, there just aren't any details available that I found that can fill in the gaps. However, on June 12th, just 11 days after Jamira's body was found, police obtained two arrest warrants for DeMarchese Mincy for murder and abuse of a corpse. Turns out that shortly after finding Jamira, DeMarchese got on detectives' radar, and as they investigated Jamira's homicide, they learned that he was linked to Ariel's too. 10 days after those warrants were issued, Mincy was arrested and taken into custody in Stonecrest, Georgia on June 22nd by the U.S. Marshals for the warrants issued in Birmingham and for unrelated child abuse charges. Turns out this dude, Mincy, age 25, and apparently a real gem, has a criminal background that contains multiple charges of assault, battery, and child abuse. He's been a terror and menace to his community and people in his life for years, and it's a good thing for all that he was finally apprehended. Now, considering that Alabama issued warrants for elevated crimes such as murder, Georgia was supposed to extradite him back to Birmingham so he could face those charges, but I couldn't find reports confirming that has happened already. From what I've seen, Georgia wants to try and convict him for his child abuse charges before he's extradited back to Alabama. So for now, he's still in Georgia's custody, which is fine. After all, Birmingham still needs to continue building their cases against him for both murders. I, for one, am very interested to learn what evidence they found linking him to both Ariel and Jamira's deaths, since neither woman was connected to the other. In fact, outside of being black women of 31 years of age, they had nothing else in common, and neither of them knew their killer. Now, if you're anything like me, your mind goes straight to serial killer. Am I right? Apparently, we aren't the only ones who thought that, because it has been reported more than once that Chief Scott Thurman did not believe that DeMarchi's Mincy was a budding serial killer. But I'm not so convinced that's the case. I mean, from looking at the known details of both cases, seems to me like he definitely was on his way to committing more murders. But of course, the police know way more about the case than I do. I guess only time will reveal the minutiae of these cases and what all has been discovered in the investigations. Whether or not this guy was a serial killer, I am just so thankful that he is off the streets and can no longer harm anyone again. This is why it's just so important that law enforcement take the disappearances and deaths of black women seriously, because doing so can lead to removing predators from our communities faster, which serves everybody's best interest. Anyway, that's all I've got for now. I'll be watching out for the development in both of these cases, and I hope to give you guys an update sometime in the near future. Until then, be safe out there, ladies. It seems like the world is full of dangerous people waiting to prey on unsuspecting women. As always, thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform so you don't miss the next episode. Also, if you haven't done so already, please do leave a 5-star review, if you feel so inclined to do so, that is. Your reviews go a very long way to help with the growth of this podcast. The more positive reviews, the more visibility the podcast has. Remember, many of the cases are unsolved, and the additional exposure to more listeners could help gain some traction in their cases. Someone out there listening may hold the key to getting these cases solved, bringing much needed justice to the victims and their families. In the meantime, I'll catch you next time on Massage and Noir Murders. This is a Savvy Sounds production, written and produced by Renetta Rideout.